Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Parenthood Podcast. We pride ourselves on having all sorts of conversations on this podcast, conversations that are honest and sometimes surprising, but always helpful. It's often the things that we find hardest to talk about that are the things we need to talk about the most. And this is definitely true of today's topic. The narrative of sex changes over the course of our lives. We recorded a podcast on how to talk about sex to your children, which generated a huge amount of listens and was something that got the nation debating. I ended up writing a piece for the Mail on Sunday and going on numerous TV and radio shows to talk about why I believed in talking to your children honestly about sex right from the very beginning. As children mature, sex is exploratory. And then when we want to have children, it often becomes more purposeful. But it's once the product of that sex has been born that it probably changes the most. And that's because of a variety of reasons. So here to talk about it today, I've got Kate Moyle, a psychosexual and relationship therapist whose job it is to talk to people about their sex lives and help them with any problems they might be having. Kate, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
It's really exciting, actually, that we're having this conversation. And I think, you know, certainly from the conversations I've had, having been so honest on this podcast, I think it's one of the things that people do need to talk about the most.
Definitely. And I think the thing is, it's one of the most difficult conversations for people to have. So it's really important that everyone knows they're not alone, because the sense is that they are the only people struggling with these problems, the only couple having these difficulties, or the only person that feels that way, and it's just not the case. Pretty much everyone's in the same boat.
Do you think British are worse at talking about it, worse than the other nationalities?
Yeah, and I think it's just such a taboo subject, you know, across the board, but especially in this country. And we have this real kind of split between, you know, even perfume adverts kind of being quite sexual and there being, you know, it all being about sex and being sexy and looking like everyone is having sex and people talking about great sex all the time. But it also being this very hidden part of our lives that people then, if they're having a problem with sex, don't know what to do with.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, as I mentioned, it changes really from when you get pregnant, doesn't it? I mean, some people become very horny when they're pregnant. And for some people, it's the opposite, isn't it? I mean, some people obviously are told they can't have sex for specific medical reasons. I mean, firstly, it's safe to have sex while you're pregnant.
Yeah, it is safe to have sex when you're pregnant. And I think one of the important things to realize is there is always, people have this fear, which seems to come up in movies and TV shows and things a lot as well, is, you know, is it going to hurt the baby? Are we going to touch the baby? And anatomically, no. Obviously, there are times, as you say, where there might be medical conditions where you're advised not to have sex. But we understand that the cervix that kind of protects the baby and, you know, is at the neck of the womb and the end of the vaginal canal is there to protect the baby. That's its job. And you're not going to be going through that unless something is going quite wrong.
Yeah, well, because obviously your cervix is kept tightly shut for the duration
until
of your
pregnancy. Until you go into labour,
yeah. And it's about 3 to 4 centimetres long. So it's a decent sort of barrier to protect your baby. And only once you start dilating does that cervix open. And that's the only time it dilates. It doesn't sort of dilate on a daily basis.
No, so it's not kind of doing it for fun. Yeah, the thing that people might feel, for example, is pressure, or if they are having sex in a particular position, which might kind of feel a bit more angled, I suppose. But it's important to realize that it is unless you've been given specific instructions not to, it is safe to have sex.
And it's worth doing it because there is going to be a period of time after your baby's born when you're not going to be having sex. So you might as well, if you're enjoying it.
Absolutely. And I think the thing is, a lot of the time people actually just feel uncomfortable, not because of the act of sex being uncomfortable when they're heavily pregnant, because of almost the logistics of it, because there is a baby-sized bump in the way.
And obviously we mentioned that, and people do talk about this a lot, you know, people wanting, women wanting lots of sex while they're pregnant. But there are obviously women that don't want much sex when they're pregnant.
Yeah, and there's no predicting who is going to be one of those women or not one of those women. And it's all about hormones, and hormones are different levels, different fluctuations for different people. Emotionally, pregnancy is a tricky time for some people. Lots of people might have had sickness. There's so much going on, exhaustion.
Backache.
Yeah. Aches, pains, headaches.
Tiredness.
Exactly. So there is no predicting who is going to be one of those people. And it's important to find out what's right for you.
Yeah. And then obviously your baby's born. And for most women, that is vaginally. So the sort of the big organ, vagina is an organ, isn't it, that you use for, that makes sex enjoyable has been, you know, stretched quite a lot. And women do feel quite sore after having given birth. Where just to, you know, sex changes for women after they've given birth. It's not just true for those who've had vaginal deliveries. It's true for women who've had C-sections too. That's right, isn't it?
And also, you know, women who have had C-sections tend to have quite painful recoveries a lot of the time. You know, their scar is quite low down in the abdomen, that it's still uncomfortable. And, you know, there's all the hormones. There's breastfeeding, which, you know, can cause vaginal dryness, which can make sex quite sore. So I think there is, you know, the 6-week rule still applies, whatever birth you've had.
So just to clarify, generally you don't have sex for 6 weeks.
And it's medically recommended that you don't try and have sex for 6 weeks. Obviously people choose to have sex in that 6-week window, but that is their choice to do so. It's recommended you don't until you've had your 6-week checkup at the GP.
And also you're bleeding for that first 6 weeks. Mm. So, you know, it kind of makes it kind of quite difficult, even if you were really keen.
Yeah, of course.
There's quite a significant bleed. But then generally what happens, women go to their GPs for a 6-week check, and then they're sort of given the all clear.
Yeah. And the one thing that they will guarantee to ask you at your 6-week checkup is if you thought about contraception, because despite the myths that exist about not being able to get pregnant when you're breastfeeding, it is possible. So that is one of the things that they will be flagging up, and definitely one of the things that you need to think about before having sex.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the things I think that people get surprised about is that you go for your GP check at 6 weeks and they ask often about your mood and whether or not you're still breastfeeding, and then contraception. But no one actually has a look at your vagina. No. And then you sort of feel that you've been signed off and you think, but how do they know? And I think women can feel a bit vulnerable around that.
Absolutely. And, you know, because of the location of it, it's not like you can very easily have a look and see if you think that things are, you know, okay, or what they look like. And, you know, lots of women might, for example, use a mirror to have a look, but it's not like it's, you know, on our hand and we can just kind of hold it up to our face and say, oh, that doesn't, you know, look like it used to.
Or show our friends.
Exactly. or ask for someone else's opinion. So I think there is a lot of anxiety in that, because you're being signed off, but you might not feel that things are normal or okay. And so you're questioning that. And I think a lot of people are also really embarrassed in that 6-week appointment to bring sex up. And that really shouldn't be the case.
And ask someone to look at their vagina.
Yeah.
I think, you know, probably the reason they don't address it is that vaginas do heal very, very well. Mm. It's a part of the body which is very vascular.
It's phenomenal,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And so most women do heal incredibly well. But you can always ask your doctor to have a look if you're worried, can't you?
Absolutely. And if you are worried, you should, because just the emotional reassurance of having someone have a look. And you can always go for a gynecology checkup or go and see a specialist. I actually recommend that most people I know who have just had a baby to go for a pelvic floor MOT. We were talking earlier about Claire Pacey, who is an amazing pelvic physiotherapist, women's specialist. And it's just actually for someone who knows what they're doing and what they're looking for to tell you that whether they think that there's any reason for concern. And sex might be uncomfortable once you start having sex again, but it certainly shouldn't be painful. And if sex is painful, then that's something that you should be checking out. It shouldn't be something that you grit your teeth and kind of carry on with, because you're more likely just to build up negative associations between sex and pain, and it's not something that you're going to want to do again.
Yeah.
And it's also not good for you.
I think, you know, I definitely see people who feel a bit guilty about asking people to look at their vagina. And yet, you know, I'm around midwives and doctors quite a lot. Mm. And they all sort of say to me, Marina, you open up your computer in the morning, you look at that. I ask women to open up their legs and I look at their vaginas. Like, for me, it's no different to you looking at your computer. So I think, you know, don't, if you're listening to this, don't feel ashamed about asking someone to take a look if it will make you feel better, just to be reassured that everything is okay.
Absolutely. And the thing is, you know, we see, so smear tests, for example, are something like 25% of women ignore their smear test letters, won't go for smear tests. And it's because it's to do with that particular body part. If we had a problem or a discomfort or a pain or a question about any other part of our bodies, we would be at the doctor straight away getting it checked out. And this stigma around, you know, our vaginas, our vulvas, that part of our body is because of shame and embarrassment, and we don't need it to be. And it's at our own, you know, risking our own health for no reason apart from the fact that we might feel a bit awkward about asking.
Mm.
And doctors have to train, you know, in gynecology as much as any other part of the body. It doesn't really make a difference to them what they're looking at.
Yeah, absolutely. And ultimately, your vagina is probably more important than your elbow or your knee, because, you know, it's used for so many different things. Yeah. And emotionally, it's very connected.
Mm. And we can't see it. So it's not like if we have, you know, a problem with our arm and we can see that something clearly isn't okay. It, you know, if there is pain and discomfort, we can't just check it in the way that we would other body parts. Mm. And so it's more important to actually get someone else to do that for you.
Yeah. So you get to the 6-week check. Mm. Hopefully you're reassured that it is okay to start having sex. Mm-hmm. But I think what is a very, very common thing is that women get to 6 weeks and think, oh, God, now I've got to have sex again. I think that's very, very common. I was talking to someone the other day and she said that she went with her husband to the sort of 6-week check, and he said, oh gosh, I can't believe, no, it was just after the baby was born, and that the midwife had said, you know, no sex for 6 weeks. Mm. And he'd understood 6 months, and he was like, God, 6 months is a long time. She was like, she didn't correct him. She thought, actually, this is quite convenient. And I think that is quite symptomatic of women postnatally who think, God, I really don't want to do this now.
Well, I think that also, you know, for all couples, that 6 weeks is gone before you've even, you know, had a chance to think about it. And suddenly it's another thing you've got to think about, another thing that you've kind of got to focus on. And also it feels like the start, or maybe the first marker of getting back to normal, when your life has been pretty much turned upside down overnight. And so you're so focused on, you know, the baby, keeping it healthy, alive, all the worries, fears that go with being a new parent, that it's, you haven't really had a chance to kind of think about yourselves or yourself, and it feels like quite a hurdle.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you're exhausted too. I mean, you know, by the time you get anywhere near your bed, you just want to flop into it and grab as much sleep as you possibly can before you're woken up again for another feed.
Yeah, exactly. I think that also, and, you know, this isn't just true of couples who have just had a baby, but this idea of, we get ready for bed, you know, we kind of wind down, we brush our teeth, we put on our pajamas, we wash our faces, we get into bed. So we're kind of winding down. And the idea of then getting into bed and having sex is a bit like kind of having to pick up your energy levels again. And if you don't feel like you have many at that point in time, it feels like a really, really big ask.
Mm. Women are also very self-conscious about their bodies. I notice that a lot in the work that I do. You know, previously very confident, you know, erudite women suddenly sort of feel very vulnerable and self-conscious. You know, your body changes a lot in pregnancy. It generally goes back to what it was.
Mm.
But I think very often women have a different view of being naked and seeing people seeing them naked, even, you know, their husband or their partner.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing is it's all very out of control. And in that 6-week window, very few people have the time or the energy to try and get their bodies back to where they were before. And so you're focusing on, again, so many other things. You haven't put yourself first. And actually, I think women feel very self-conscious about their bodies. And a lot of the time, their partners don't really mind and
love it.
Yeah, exactly. And there's this kind of celebration of, look what your body did. That's amazing. But again, it is a sense of, oh, my body's changed and I didn't choose for it to change in this way. You know, all of the amazing things it's done, now I'm kind of dealing with the stuff that's not so great or the stuff I don't feel so positive about. And a lot of it is about being out of control, and we don't really like that feeling.
And breasts, you know, you've talked before about sort of changing, you know, perception of breasts. You know, before babies, breasts are sexual, and then, you know, certainly while you're breastfeeding, they become the vessels that feed your baby. Mm. And there's almost a bit of a conflict there.
Definitely.
Because, you know, when it comes to your baby, you don't sort of want to think about sex and sexuality. But then, you know, your breasts are sort of they've got two very important jobs.
Yeah. And, you know, even things like, so breastfeeding releases oxytocin. So we know that that kind of bonding feeling, that closeness, lots of people also get that feeling and that kind of rush from having their breasts touched during sex, during foreplay. And so, you know, chemically, we're also primed to kind of have those feelings, and that can feel good, but actually it can feel confusing to mix the two. So to mix kind of breastfeeding and, you know, having a breast touch during sex, or, and so we were talking earlier about ways that women could, for example, make themselves feel more comfortable, and it might be, you know, wearing a bra that they feel is nice for the first few times they've had sex, or, you know, keeping a top on, because there is a sense of they've changed function temporarily, and that barrier is very difficult to know how to navigate.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not the case for all women. Some women might be able to split the two. It's individual.
And I guess lingerie is kind of a way of sort of retaining a little bit more control over something you don't have much control over, not being fully clothed, but also having a little bit of something to hide the parts of your body that you might just want not to be hanging out.
Well, just for you to feel more comfortable, because the thing is, if you're not feeling comfortable, you aren't going to enjoy sex as much or touch as much or intimacy as much, because you're going to be distracted. And so whatever makes you feel more comfortable, especially for those early times after you've had a baby or the first times you're having sex again, when you're already going to not be feeling completely relaxed in yourself, anything that makes you feel better, you know, more relaxed, more comfortable, is going to be of benefit to you.
One thing that I read was sort of hormones that are released sort of after you've given birth are hormones that sort of don't make you feel necessarily very sexual, very horny. And that's possibly from an evolutionary point of view to discourage women from having sex again too soon after they've given birth, to prevent them from getting pregnant again too soon after giving birth. And I guess that's something that does play a big role, because your mood and your hormones play a huge role in terms of whether or not you want to have sex at all.
Mm, definitely. And, you know, I think a really important thing to understand is also that sexual desire, so we talk about arousal, so the physical ability to be able to have sex, and we talk about desire, the want to have sex. Desire is typically responsive, so it's very rare that you kind of get into bed and suddenly feel spontaneously turned on. But what is more likely is that you feel responsive, so you might have had a really nice evening together and you get into bed and you're feeling really close and you start kissing and things kind of go in that direction, or there you are responding to something, or you watched a film that had a really nice scene in that you kind of thought, oh, that would be nice. Or so again, it's about also how we understand this idea of, you know, feeling aroused, that it is feeling desire, that we want to feel close to our partners, that is not just this flick of a switch and suddenly kind of we're on, that actually there is a process involved in that. And a large part of that is psychological, you know, the quote you were saying earlier that you loved much.
I saw it on your Instagram that was something like that, the most, you know, when it comes to sex, the most important 6 inches are between the ears.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I totally get that. It's about, it's psychological, possibly more so for women than men. I don't know.
I think for both, you know, I mean, I guess in my practice, I work with lots of men and lots of women, you know, who are struggling with sex and sexual difficulties. But, you know, there's a big talk, especially at the moment in the media, about mindful sex. And essentially, mindful sex is giving sex your full attention, you know, focusing fully on what you're doing, because the rest of our lives are so distracted with children and technology and work. And when we split our attention, we're not actually splitting it. We are kind of multitasking, so kind of flitting between things. And actually, when we focus on sex, we experience more fully, so we're going to have more pleasure, we're going to enjoy ourselves more, and we're actually more likely to enjoy it to the point of wanting to do it again. It's going to be more beneficial for everyone, but we are so distracted. And I think that there is a huge sense of that, especially when you've just had a baby. You know, how do I find the time and the space to have sex? How do I kind of let go of everything else that's going on? Because I'm always one ear out for crying, which is normally the sound that we wake up to, or noises. And that's because, again, we are primed to do so. We can't turn off that, you know, kind of maternal instinct or paternal instinct.
It overrides everything.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've talked about the obstacles that are in the way of often having sex. But I think, you know, it's probably right to say sort of being mindful that, you know, it's worth starting to have sex again. And often, you know, I've spoken to lots of women who said, you know, I didn't really feel like it, but I did it. And afterwards, it was really nice. I'm really glad we'd done it. And making, you know, just being aware of that. I'm not saying you need to be forced into anything by any means, but sometimes you do something that you didn't think you were going to enjoy and you actually really did enjoy it a lot more than you thought.
And I think there's so much anticipation around this idea that suddenly, you know, you have the 6 week check and the next day you should be having sex. That isn't the case at all. You should take your time. You should kind of just go at your own pace and do what you want to do. Talk to your partner about it is really important. They also might be having some, you know, feelings about having sex again. You know, they might be quite nervous about having sex again. And a lot of partners actually really report fear of hurting their wife or hurting their girlfriend. You know, she's been through something really challenging, as childbirth is for, you know, most people, at least in some way. And, you know, they might be feeling really nervous about causing pain or discomfort to their partner because they care for them and they don't want them to be experiencing anything about that. And that can also impact them feeling relaxed about sex. So it's really important to kind of communicate between the two of you about how you feel about starting sex again. You might not feel ready, neither of you might feel ready. And you might say, actually, well, shall we just give it a few weeks? But, you know, we can start getting into bed or making sure that we kind of take some clothes off or lie together or talk in bed a bit more or try and spend a bit more time together. So it doesn't have to be a instant, you know, process either. There are lots of other ways of being intimate that include touch and playing together and touching each other and kissing. You could have a bath together. There are, it can be a gradual process as well. It's not kind of jumping straight back in at the deep end.
Yeah. And I think that conversation is really important. You know, we know that communication lies at the heart of every relationship, and certainly every good relationship. And, you know, I can see from the woman's point of view, you know, she's sitting there going, oh, I'm not quite sure if I'm ready for this, but is a bit, doesn't want to talk about it. He could interpret that as she doesn't find me attractive anymore. She doesn't.
Yeah.
And especially if that's combined with the idea that if the woman's saying, I don't really want to kiss and cuddle him, because he might see that as the green light to have sex. And then I'm going to have to say, no, I don't want that. And I'm going to be put in an awkward situation. But if there's none of that kissing and cuddling taking place, he might think, oh, she doesn't want me just even to touch her. And if you have the conversation and you say, listen, I love you and I still find you hugely attractive and I can't wait to start having sex again, but I'm not quite ready. And you start having that conversation. A, it allows you to have the contact and the intimacy without worrying about that, you know, it's going to end up in having to have sex or having to say no to sex. But also it means that there's no misinterpretation of that not wanting to have sex right now, that it doesn't get taken as that.
Absolutely. And that is you know, such an important point, because there is that idea of I don't want to start something and for it then to have to go somewhere, so it's better for me not to do anything. But what that results in is both partners actually feeling really undesired, and we know because of the kind of social narrative that there is that women also feel, you know, anxious or stressed or kind of self-conscious about their bodies, but also their partners are probably feeling undesired. And it fits in again to that narrative, which is you have a baby and therefore there's then no time for your relationship or no time for you as a couple or no time for your partner. So baby comes first, then, you know, if we're talking about a heterosexual relationship, then the man. And if that idea is already there, which it is just in the art of conversation, it's going to not feel great for them, whereas actually they just want to feel close to their partners a lot of the time and that they aren't second best. Mm. But the reality is, you know, you're navigating the complexities of having a young family and that something's got to give. But so it's a worth being mindful of those stolen moments that you can have together and making sure that you're telling each other that that isn't the case.
Yeah, so hopefully, you know, after you've had a baby and you're still starting to think about having sex again, it's a sort of slow touching, it's intimacy, it's hugging, it's that kind of physical contact. Mm. And you know, I suppose also being quite creative in terms of when you do it. I mean, a lot of parents find at the end of the day, they're so exhausted that they just can't face sex. But it doesn't have to be at the end of the day. You know, babies sleep, hopefully they have at least one nap in the middle of the day. And actually an afternoon might be a great opportunity to, you know, get into bed together and have a, yeah, some intimate time together, whatever that involves.
And you can also, you know, you talk to lots of parents and they say, you know, we never used to have quickies, but now they're a necessity and pretty much the only way we can fit sex into our schedules. Or, you know, the baby's having its morning nap, so we both jump in the shower and things like that. You know, there is creativity is absolutely brilliant for your sexual life and your intimate life anyway, whether you've had a baby or not, mixing things up. But it's also about not being afraid to try and do things differently if you've always done things the same way. And again, talking about it, but trying it and see if it doesn't work, laugh about it. Mm. It's not going to be the end of the world. And, you know, see how it goes.
When you do end up having sex again, let's just talk about the sort of practicalities.
Yeah.
I mean, you alluded to it earlier and you said a lot of women experience vaginal dryness. Mm. So, I mean, you were saying that lubricant is really a necessity.
Absolutely. And especially for kind of having sex for the first few times. So it might also be referred to as vaginal atrophy. So basically, but we also know that breastfeeding kind of creates vaginal dryness. But again, if you're quite nervous about having sex again or not feeling kind of fully in the mood or feeling a bit tense, lubricant is essential. I'd really recommend the Yes Organics range. You don't want to be buying anything flavored or anything with kind of tingle sensations, because it's really important to kind of make sure that you're not going to have any negative reactions to anything or any adverse reactions to anything. Women that have had an episiotomy might have scar tissue, so it might mean that things feel a bit tighter than they used to. Lubricant will just make everything easier. It's also great for clitoral stimulation, which is going to mean that you're going to feel more turned on, you know, experience more pleasure. And that's a huge, huge part of it.
So it's probably worth just buying some. You can stick it on your bedside table. And if you use it, great. If you don't use it, not the end of the world.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's when you're starting to have sex again, you should be doing everything to help yourselves. Don't think that you should feel embarrassed about the fact that you have to, for example, use lubricant, or that you shouldn't have to, or that it means that you're not turned on or not attracted to your partner or not aroused anymore. You know, this is biology. It's not a choice.
Yeah, I guess it's no different to having low iron levels. Exactly. No woman is berating herself for that.
Exactly. It's just because it's to do with sex and we feel awkward and stigmatized and embarrassed about it. And if it makes your life easier, if it makes trying sex easier and you feel more comfortable, the only thing it's going to encourage you to do is to want to have sex again. And your partner's not going to say, no, you shouldn't be doing that without lubrication, or I don't want to do that either. So again, it's just about making yourself feel more comfortable and helping yourself. You know, we help ourselves in every other walk of life. It's just that when we come to sex, we don't really know how to or where to turn.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people worry that having squeezed a baby out of their vagina, sex isn't going to feel the same again, mm-hmm. and that it might not be as pleasurable as it once was. I did read something where a group of women was asked, "What changes? How does sex change after giving birth?" And one lady said, "His penis shrinks." But actually, it's not always the case, is it? You know, very often women experience a tightness that makes it more uncomfortable.
Especially if they've had an episiotomy and have got scar tissue, or, you know, because of where the stitches can sometimes be, things can feel a bit tighter. Also, the pelvic floor muscles kind of sit around the vagina. So the vaginal canal is incredibly elastic, as we well know. It can fit a baby out of it. But if you're tensing, that group of muscles that kind of holds everything in is strong enough that it can completely close the vaginal entrance. So that's really important to understand, that if you are feeling tense, and you'll probably notice it in other parts of your body, that that's going to be quite sore. That's going to be hurting, because it's a bit like trying to kind of put your finger in your eye, because your eye automatically wants to close because it thinks it's going to hurt. But you can train yourself, for example, to put contact lenses in, because your approach to it, the way you're thinking about it, is different.
One of the things that I think hopefully every woman is told is that to start doing pelvic floor exercises already in their pregnancy, because the pelvic floor muscles are put under a huge amount of pressure when you're pregnant, and they're essentially weightlifting, holding up an entire baby. So women are recommended to do them 3 times a day, I think, before their baby's born. But then that should be upped to 6 times a day after the baby's born. They're really important exercises, aren't they?
Really important. And not only just for sexual functioning, but also for kind of bladder control. But also, you know, lots of women, if they aren't doing their pelvic floor exercises or don't feel like they have a lot of control over their pelvic floor, for example, might feel really nervous about having sex in case they leak. Mm-hmm. So it's important about gaining confidence as well. And I do quite a bit of work with Elvie, the pelvic floor trainer. And something like that can also really help you in terms of understanding your pelvic floor and making sure you're doing the exercises right. But again, as we mentioned before, having a pelvic MOT after having a baby, so a kind of post-baby checkup, can be a really important part of you also learning how to do those exercises correctly and feeling that they are strong, because they are under a huge amount of pressure, and that can cause problems for some people.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're easy to do. I mean, they're super easy to do, but a lot of women do them and almost think they can't be that easy. But, you know, and so want some reassurance that they are actually doing them right. So actually, that's why products like the LV that can test essentially the strength of your pelvic floor, or just going to see someone to make sure that your pelvic floor is, you know, functioning right, can be really, really helpful.
And also, like going to the gym, you know, you wouldn't go and pick up the heaviest set of weights first. You start with the lighter ones and you kind of build up strength, and our pelvic floor is exactly the same. And as you said, you know, holding up the weight of a baby and, you know, keeping essentially all your kind of organs in place is a big job.
And I mean, going forward, in terms of having kind of more regular sex that is enjoyable, sort of tips wise, I mean, one of the things that I feel is quite important is sort of being in the right frame of mind. I think women very often focus all their attention on their babies when they're born. You know, it's all about how the baby is dressed, what the baby is eating, the prettiness of the nursery, and the woman is literally slobbing around in tracky bums and not even having a shower every day. And that's probably not conducive to a sort of, I'm not even saying a great sex life, just, you know, happiness in general. I think a bit of self-love goes a long way, doesn't it?
Definitely. And, you know, I often work with people and say even simple things like getting a moisturizer that smells really nice and kind of, you know, moisturizing your body every day, doing something just for you is really important. But also, I think it's interesting you just said like a great sex life, and your sex life doesn't have to be great straight away. And I think that's really important to acknowledge, is it might not be back to where it was straight away, but it is very likely that it will get there. But your expectations shouldn't be that, you know, sex will feel amazing the first time. You're probably both going to feel a bit nervous. It's probably going to feel different. You're going to be wondering about what that difference is going to feel like, how it's going to feel. There's quite a lot of, you know, anticipation. You also might be listening out to see when the baby's next going to wake up, or wondering how much time you're going to have. Or
your mind drifting. Oh, I forgot to put that on the Ocado shop.
Yeah. or that you're exhausted, you know, all of the things that go with that. And I think giving yourselves a break and just being like, it just has to be okay.
Yeah.
We don't need it to be amazing.
Well, and also nothing in life is great the whole time. Life's not great the whole time. No. It's cyclical. Sometimes you have amazing weeks and sometimes you have rubbish weeks. And I guess it's kind of fair to assume that sex lives is a bit like that too.
It is. But the thing is we don't ever talk about that. So we only talk about when sex is amazing or when we see kind of celebrity couples and we assume they have great sex. You know, every couple on Instagram that looks so happy in their photos, there was just the assumption that their sex life is as good as they look, and it isn't the case. Of course things go up and down, but we don't ever really talk about what the reality of sex is like. And actually one of the times the conversation might come up is after you've had a baby, and it's really one of the only times in our lives we kind of get an allowance for it not being okay. But again, the conversations we don't have about it, they're not always that honest.
Like a lot of things on social media. What about if your baby's sleeping in the same room as you? I mean, obviously that's the recommendation, that for the first 6 months your baby sleeps in the same room as you. That's like another great big barrier to obstructive barrier to having sex. It's okay, isn't it?
It's mostly about how comfortable, you know, the two people having sex are. And most of them will struggle because it's a distraction, or there's just something that doesn't feel that comfortable about it. So for example, lots of couples might kind of run next door and try and have sex on the sofa, or if the baby's asleep, you know, try and have sex in a different room and just put the monitor kind of, we talked about, you know, putting the monitor by the door so it's not right next to your head, but you can still hear it if it goes off, or so that, you know, the kind of flashing light of the monitor isn't there kind of warning you that everything, you're about to have to stop what you're doing. And again, it's about getting into a good headspace. But I think that most people feel they need to be relaxed enough to try and have sex.
Yeah. I mean, I read one study that said that, you know, 94% of women felt that good sex resumed pretty quickly after the birth of their children. And that half of those said that it actually got better after having children. I mean, do you see that?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, it changes your relationship, doesn't it? And there was a study done that said, it cited something like 276 reasons that people have sex. And one of those is to try and get pregnant. So when we're trying to get pregnant, sex becomes quite functional for a lot of people, or we're more aware of when we're ovulating or trying to kind of have sex at the right time. And then it's also about understanding that sex can have different roles in our lives. So sometimes we might want to have sex because we want to have an orgasm, or we feel the need for pleasure. It might just be because we feel really close to our partners, or we are in bed together and suddenly it turns into sex and we didn't quite expect it to, or that we just have a sense of kind of wanting to touch and explore, or for fun. You know, we talk about sex for fun is so important. And so I think it's also about thinking, you know, that sex doesn't have to be the same way or for the same reason all the time.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing is that I think a lot of people, women, feel quite intimidated about having sex after they've had their first baby. They don't quite know what the experience is going to be like. They don't know how much it's going to hurt. And all that anxiety sort of builds into something much, much more. Women report that going back to sex after having subsequent babies tends to be a lot easier, doesn't it?
And I think with anything, we know what to expect a bit more if we've done it before. The anticipation has a lot to answer for in terms of that, because we're kind of building up and building up and building up. And actually, you know, a bit kind of like when we start having sex for the first time earlier in our lives, it's not always everything it's cracked up to be, but there's a kind of understanding about that, which is like, okay, so how do we make this better for us? You know, what would we like more of? What would feel better for us? Or would I feel more comfortable if the lights were down a bit lower, or if I was wearing a particular item of clothing? Or, and you know, saying to your partner, what would you like more of? Or why don't we have a shower before so we feel kind of clean and comfortable? You know, there's all of the stuff that goes with sex. And I think one of the important things that we were kind of talking about earlier in the conversation is the intentionality of it. So I want to do something with you as my partner. It doesn't really matter if it doesn't lead to intercourse. There's other ways that we can be close and intimate, but I want to do something with you. And I think that there's a huge, huge part of that. And that's actually the bit that couples miss the most, rather than necessarily the act of sex.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, going back to kind of pain in sex, I mean, you mentioned that for a lot of women it is quite painful. That's why you advocate using some lubricant. When does the pain become a problem? At what point, you know, if someone's listening to this saying, oh gosh, 3 months on, it's still quite painful, is that a problem? What point should you seek advice?
If it is ongoing and ongoing enough for you to kind of be worrying about it, you should be seeing someone. And again, you know, it could be... pain is such a kind of big umbrella term. It could be a burning sensation, or it could be tightness, or it could be soreness. Some women have scar tissue, as we talked about earlier. Some women might have a kind of sensitivity. There's also, you know, as we talked about, there's lots of blood vessels kind of. So some women get kind of varicose veins in their vulva, kind of very thin varicose veins. They can cause some discomfort. The important thing is that you're getting checked by someone to find out what that pain is for. If there is a sense of tightness, it's probably because you're actually tensing quite a lot as well. So those muscles are creating tightness, which is going to create tension, which is going to cause discomfort or friction, which is where lubricant can help. But it's about finding out what the pain is caused by is really, really important. It shouldn't be painful on an ongoing basis.
And you just go to your GP and they can then refer you to the appropriate person.
Yeah.
But don't, I mean, definitely kind of consistently painful sex is definitely something to go to the GP about.
Absolutely.
And there's lots they can do. I mean, we're lucky to be living in 2018 where, you know, there are some great solutions.
There are amazing solutions. There are pelvic physiotherapists, there are doctors, there are gynecologists, there are women's health specialists, there are psychosexual therapists, there's, you know, sexual medicine. And it's really important because also lots of people might kind of get on with it but not be enjoying sex, and actually they then get to the point where they'd like to think about trying for another baby, and sex becomes very functional again. Or actually that's when you have to deal with the difficulties that you're having with sex because you are trying to have sex more, and you want to have things sorted out before then. You want to be having sex for other reasons than trying to have a baby.
Yeah. What if people are listening to this and they haven't had sex for years? Because even though people don't talk about it, you know, there are people for whom that does apply. Where would you sort of start? Firstly, how important is sex in a relationship? Is there such thing as a perfectly happy sexless relationship?
Yeah, there absolutely is. And I don't know if you saw it, but this week on the Victoria Derbyshire show, they were talking about sexless relationships. And a sexless relationship, technically, I mean, this is obviously hugely up for debate, is a couple that are having sex less than 10 times a year. But really, the problem for couples happens when one part is the difference between how much partners want to have sex. If both partners are happy not having sex, then it shouldn't cause a problem at all.
And if they're then happy to be intimate with each other in different ways, whether that's through conversation or touching or whatever.
Absolutely. And, you know, some people don't like sex, you know, like everything else in life. We don't have to like everything. And the problem comes up when people want to try and get pregnant, obviously, because obviously there are other medical interventions, but it's the primary way of getting pregnant. But the biggest problem tends to be if one partner wants a lot of sex and the other partner wants no sex, it's the difference between the two. But sexless relationships exist, of course, and those couples work sometimes.
And if that's not working, you know, if one part, if there's no sex, but they both feel that they should be having sex for whatever reason, where do you go to? I mean, that's presumably where they come to see someone like you.
Yeah, a psychosexual or relationship therapist. Again, it's about, in that instance, we would be exploring, you know, what sex means to both parties. Is there other ways that they can feel intimate? What sex used to be like, if what their ideas about sex are like, and the expectations, you know, if you were having sex, what would feel different? And we want to understand for that couple what sex means, what role it plays in their life, and how they can then, you know, change it. And a lot of the time it is just this fear of, because sex is so vulnerable and intimate, and we don't talk about it, even with the person most actually often, never with the person we're having sex with, it's the sense of, if I suggest sex and they say no, that will be worse than if I don't suggest it and they're not suggesting it, so maybe they don't want to have sex either. And so we have this kind of unspoken stalemate.
Yeah, and it can snowball too then.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, if you don't say something, stuff is often assumed, like in any relationship, like with your children, to be honest. Yeah. If you don't talk about sex to your children when, you know, they're in a position which is probably about five to talk about it, they'll start thinking, oh my gosh, it's
I
much
can't
more,
talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. Or that it's scary or disgusting, or, and it starts associating all these feelings that aren't, you know, appropriate to be feeling.
And I think that is just typical of sex as a subject across the board. You know, I know, for example, being a psychosexual therapist, people are either terrified or intrigued about what that actually entails, because it's talking about sex, you know, every day. It's the difficult conversations, but it's really, really important. Sex is a part of our lives and our sexualities are a part of us. And if our sex lives aren't the way we want them to, actually that can really affect the rest of us, you know, our self-esteem, how we feel about ourselves, our confidence, our relationships. And we understand that we need to, it's a part of keeping ourselves healthy in whatever way we choose to do that. So that doesn't mean having sex a particular amount, but we could have sex once a year and have amazing sex, and that would be enough for us as a person. Yeah. It's so individual.
Well, I think the fact that we're talking about it is a really good thing. It's the fact that, you know, people like you exist, but the fact that, you know, confident enough to be able to talk about this openly on a podcast, and hopefully that will give people listening, you know, certainly lots to think about, but maybe the confidence to initiate a conversation with either their partner or their friends, you know, because we talk about, as women, we're quite good generally at talking about things, but often it's not the things that we, you know, don't we need to talk about the most that we don't talk about.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a huge part of that is someone needs to start the conversation, and often the fear is about starting it. And once it's started, it tends to flow.
This has been brilliant, Kate. It's been so fascinating chatting. So thank you so much for joining us. If you want to contact Kate, read about what she's been writing or learn about what she's up to, check out her website. It's katemoyle.co.uk. She's also on Twitter and Instagram. Just search for Kate Moyle, M-O-Y-L-E, or follow the links. I'll put the links up actually in our episode notes. Thank you all for listening to another episode of The Parenthood. People are starting to stop me in the street to tell me how much they enjoy The Parenthood podcast. So you guys are doing a brilliant job of getting the word out. So keep on rating, reviewing, and talking about us. But in the meantime, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.